and welcome to episode 128 of season 11 Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and join me once again to finish off his stint, maybe he'll have enough points to go home, is Jim O'Kane, the godfather of the Movies by Minute format, and also the one of the three co-hosts on the Captain America Minute that is playing as we speak. Welcome back to the show, Jim.
Oh, Rob, you'd know I'd re-enlist if you were doing another one of these. That's fine.
All right, great. I'm very happy to hear that. Very happy to hear that. So, episode 128 begins with Spears giving out the formation order and ends with an interview beginning. So we left things off yesterday with the men standing in the quad, I guess, of this Austrian hotel. And they're all standing in formation there. And Spears just starts screaming out orders. He goes, right shoulder, hope, order, hope, at ease. And then he starts giving a speech. And he goes, General Taylor is aware that many veterans, including Normandy veterans, still do not have the 85 points required to be discharged. On this, the anniversary of D-Day, he has authorized a lottery to send one man home in each company, effective immediately. So first of all, I find that really cool that they actually had a lottery about this, on the anniversary of D-Day, just let someone go home.
Yeah, I was just wondering how tragic it would have been if one of the new guys left. Like, well, I was there at D-Day, and this guy's going.
O'Keefe just got in, a few weeks ago, and now he's going home. Crap. then they have a helmet that is filled with pieces of paper apparently, and Welsh puts his hand in it and starts moving his hand around and like smirks, and then pulls out a little piece of paper and hands it to Spears, and Spears goes. And as he's passing it to Spears, they pass the helmet, and we see the helmet is now completely empty.
Yeah.
Which means that there was only one piece of paper in the helmet. But I love the way that Welsh fake mixes, the one piece of paper. Yeah. And Spears opens up the piece of paper and goes, for Easy Company, the winner is... And you see a very young Tom Hardy going, come on, come on, come on, come on. he really hopes it's going to be him. And it's unfortunate that Janovic was not chosen, but whatever. And then serial number 130-66266. Sergeant Darrell C. Powers, and everyone starts cheering and everything like that. So the first thing I checked is, do you think that's his real serial number? Or do you think they just made one up?
I think it could be his real one. If it's from the book, I would think they would use his real one.
Okay, well, again, the book does not mention the number itself, but they did.
Oh, okay.
He actually got to, this is his real, serial number. And I know that you've had this discussion on your Captain America, podcast, but, do you know how serial numbers are, what they represent?
They are deployed. I think it's the deployment. we went over this, but I had notes in front of me. It was, I believe it was the deployment year and where you were brought in. It's like it'll tell you what state it was, and that's how the prefix is on it. That's where it came from, what year you were eligible for it, and also what state you were being elected from or drafted by. I'm pretty sure that's how it came about. Oh, and no, the first one, the first digit itself meant whether you were career army or whether you were drafted. That's what it was.
Very good, very good.
Yeah. And
Okay, so.
then the next, I don't remember how many digits, but probably two digits tell you what state you were coming from. So like all the New York guys or
Sort of, you're close. You're
or
close.
the recruiting center where you're taken in, like, or you're from. It might be even U.S. Representative district. Like everybody from Brooklyn was from Brooklyn. They all had the same number. Okay, they hadn't invented area codes yet, so I don't remember. I'm not sure.
Right. Okay, so basically the first digit, as you said, it has to do with your enlistment type. So the first number is, if it's a one, it means you're a regular Army volunteer. Two is National Guard. Three or four means that you were drafted.
Right.
Okay. So what that means is, because there's a one here, it shows us that that Shifty was a volunteer. I mean, we know that everyone volunteered to be in the paratroopers, but it could have been that they were drafted and then volunteered to be in, here. But according to this, 50 completely volunteer. So the second digit is the geographic region. It's not the state. And there are nine geographic regions. And how do you think they're split up? Any idea of how they would split up?
I
Nine
would
of
guess
how many?
by judicial circuit court, perhaps.
That's a good guess. I mean, again, I don't know if it lines up with what I have here.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So you have number one was the New England states: Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Number two was the New York area.
Mid-Atlantic?
Nope,
Yeah.
New York area is
Oh, just New York area. Okay.
New York, New Jersey, and Delaware. Number three was Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, and Washington. Okay, and Shifty was from I believe Maryland, so that's why it. Sorry, he was from Virginia. Shifty was from Virginia, so that's why his next number is a three. The four would be the Southeast: Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tennessee. Five is parts of the Midwest: Ohio, West Virginia, Indiana, and Kentucky. Or sorry, that's like the bluegrass area, I guess. Six is Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin. Seven was the Plains and Western Midwest: Colorado, Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wyoming. Eight is the Southern Central area: Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. And the ninth is the West Coast and Territories: Alaska, Arizona, California, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, Oregon, Utah, and Washington.
Wow. I guess it could be based on a population distribution.
Yeah, that's right.
Intriguing.
And anyone who was from a territory, they were given that's outside of the U.S. It was given a zero. So, for instance, a zero after the first digit, because the first digit is whether they volunteered or not. So, for instance, somebody from Hawaii, which was not a state yet, would have been a 301. And Puerto Rico would be 302, things like that. And then after that, it was a chronological number, the way that they gave the numbers out. And do you know how many digits there are in a serial number?
I'm guessing six or seven. No, seven. I think it'd be seven.
It's eight.
Eight, okay.
Actually,
Wow, so.
it depends on where you serve. Because in the Army or Air Force there are eight digits. The Navy had seven digits, Marine Corps had six digits, and the Coast Guard had seven digits also. Interesting. Yeah, so that's how the numbers work out for that. Which is really interesting. The way
Yeah,
that They explain this.
And I guess that, yeah, and they filled in the zeros so it was it wouldn't expand. You wouldn't have like a four digit guy and they just keep filling in with zeros.
Right. Exactly. So, basically, the book talks about this this story of what happens here. I you know what? I'm gonna wait and tell the story after we find out a little bit more of
Okay.
what's gonna happen because it's all gonna be together. So everyone's all happy that Shifty was chosen, and one of the guys screams out, "That's how it's done, Shifty! Congratulations, Shifty!" And
How many people knew how many people knew Shifty was going home? I just was wondering beforehand.
I have a feeling it was very few of them. I don't think I mean obviously Janovic didn't know.
Yeah.
But my assumption is that it was something that most of
The officer corps
the officers
knew.
knew about it. Exactly. Because I mean you can even see on Bull's face. Bull doesn't look
Yeah.
doesn't you know Bull's hoping that they call his number two. You can see it. But everyone's still proud that it is Shifty,
Yeah.
from that perspective. And then
Yeah, they don't. No, nobody feels like he didn't deserve it. It was, I mean, for what he's been through, it's just enough to go home.
exactly. And then Spears continues and goes, "Sergeant Grant, we'll see to it that second platoon takes over at the crossroads checkpoint beginning tonight at 2200 hours." And the two of the guys are standing next to him. "So much for our anniversary." He goes, "Yeah, no shit." And then Spears continues and goes, "General Taylor has also announced that the 101st Airborne Division will definitely be redeployed to the Pacific. So beginning tomorrow at 0600 hours, we'll begin training to go to war." I'm sure these guys were really happy. And then the shot changes and we see Winter sitting in, I guess you can say, his new office. I don't know what else you would call it. He hears a knock on the door. And he says, "Come in." And we see that again, he's got a great view here. Maybe he's sitting on his balcony, I guess writing a report, signing a document, whatever it could be. And and Shifty enters and comes over to him and goes, "Don't mean to interrupt you, sir. Just wanted to say goodbye. Well, it's been a long time." And Winter's in, "You got everything you need?" "Yes, sir. Gathered up my loot, pistols mainly. Paperwork's all done. I even got my back pay in my pocket. Back home in Virginia. Well, I just don't rightly know how I'm gonna explain all this. You see, I seen, and Winter just says, "You're a hell of a fine soldier, Shifty. There's nothing more to explain." He goes, "Thank you, sir." So I think this is a great little way to show us that these guys went through some really, really difficult situations, and only now that they're sitting and the adrenaline has gone and stuff like that, they're starting to think about, okay, one second, what how do I tell people what I just did? What are they gonna think of me? What are they gonna And so using Shifty as this character is great because Shifty has always been a aw shucks kind of guy, like a character who when you look at him you're he's the guy next door. He's the he's I say this in the nicest way, the hick next door type of thing. It's he's not and if he's gonna have trouble trying to figure out how to explain these things, you can only imagine what others are gonna be thinking. With the way that their families are gonna interpret everything that goes on, stuff like that. Because again, Shifty's from a background of hunters, of fighters, that type of thing. It's easier for them to understand it, but not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think it's what what Stephen Crane tried to touch on in The Red Badge of Courage.
Yeah.
The back during the Civil War, veterans called it, they would say, "I've seen the elephant," is the way they looked at war. And imagine going back home to somebody who's never seen an elephant and trying to explain what is an elephant, what's an elephant like, and trying to come up with the words to explain to somebody who's never seen the elephant what the elephant was like. And that, that was just as true in World War II as it was in the Civil War. You can't explain it to people who haven't experienced it with you, who haven't seen the kind of horrors and the kind of courage and the kind of just earth-shaking events that are happening all around you, and the fact that you've come close to death without dying. And war is described as a circus, and being able to say, you've seen the elephant, you can understand, other veterans would understand the elephant that you're talking about. And for a lot of them, it would be the elephant in the room that you can't talk about with the non-veterans that you come home to. And that's, we've dealt with that in the discussions that we had for the best years of our lives, that trying to deal with what wasn't the, I mean, post-traumatic stress syndrome wasn't really understood back then. I mean, it was called war jitters or shell shock, or and it wasn't so, like, the people that hadn't experienced it couldn't understand all the pressure and the, this concentrate. I mean, you think about Shifty has been fighting his way across Europe for a year. I mean, just one solid year of, you could die today. People are trying to kill you. And now he's got to go back and, he's got to plug in at the life that he unplugged sometime in, 3 or 4 years ago. And watching this actor does a great job showing that he doesn't he's processing it now. He doesn't even have the words to explain the emotions and the experiences that he's had, and this is gonna haunt him, not just going home, but for the rest of his life. He'll be always thinking about these moments that he's had with these other men and what they faced, and what, they, constantly all wonder whether it was worth it, all the friends that they made and lost, all the friends that they shared common terrors with, and wondering if they could, if they would have to face it again, all while listening to well-meaning people who didn't go through it talk with them at home. So, and it's a great, I mean, it's a great explanation. I've said this on previous episodes. I grew up with everybody's dad was, and some moms were fighting World War II, and they didn't, at the time they didn't talk about it, because the reference points they had couldn't be shared with people who didn't go through it, and the people that went through it together didn't need to talk about it with, or they felt that they didn't need to talk about it until they were very old. I noticed that, like, I'd say around the late 80s or 90s, the late 1980s, 1990s, the older people that I knew that were World War II vets started opening up and chatting about these things. I know my uncle Al was captured in Bastogne and was forced to march across France and the Netherlands and into Germany, and he wound up in a POW camp, and was he woke up one morning in the POW camp and the guards had left the gates open, and that was the end of the war for him. But he hardly ever talked about it until my son asked him about it at my aunt's funeral, and he just started telling everything that went on to my son, and it had been 50 plus years since that, that terrible thing had happened to him, but he hardly ever talked about it at all at any family gathering or things like that. It was just, yeah, your uncle was a POW, and that was it. That was all, that's all you heard about it, but he never chatted about it until he kind of opened up with my son about that stuff. And here we're seeing the first pieces of
Yeah,
that.
exactly. I mean, again, Peter Youngblood Hills does a great job here, and I've been in touch with him. He unfortunately was just too busy and wasn't able to be on, which is unfortunate, but I completely understand also. from that perspective. I am actually going to send him a Facebook note right now after we finish recording today, telling him how much this scene meant to us, because
Yeah, no, I appreciate letting him know that,
yeah.
because this is a difficult, it's not only a difficult scene to get through just from the script, but being able to share those emotions in here. He did a fantastic job through the whole series. I mean, not just this scene, but he did a great job showing what it was like to face these emotional, highs and lows. You're pinging back and forth. And all the time worried about, are you going to live? Are the people around you going to live? And facing death every single day, and you don't know when it's going to end. And here, all of a sudden, it's over him, and he doesn't have the words to find out what to do, what to do with everything that's in his head right
Right,
now.
they feel lost at this point.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, this is Rob from the future. Just letting you know that I did get in touch with Peter after Jim and I discussed what we thought of his performance, and I wrote to him telling him how much we really appreciated what he did with Shifty. And so I'm going to read his response. He says, "Thanks a bunch. Know that I can't take credit for the performances. It truly was a group effort, and I might add, divined in a certain way. I mean, it's very rare to get to spend time with a person you're playing and shape the performance based on time spent with him. I can take credit for fighting to keep certain things true to who he was, and even was able to put it in a line that he spoke to me directly. It got done, and I give all praise to all who made it what it's worth." So thank you very much, Peter, for that response. That's great. And now we will get back to my conversation with Jim. Because they've been dealing with this momentum. And again, I think that's one of the reasons why it was so important to the men of Easy to have their reunions every year. Because they couldn't talk to their families about it, but they could talk to each other, or not even. My assumption is that for many years, most of them would just sit with the others and talk about other things, not talk about the war. But there were people who went through something very similar, and therefore, you don't have to talk about what we did during the war, but we still do have this common bond and stuff like that. And I
Yeah.
think that's really, really important. And I think that's one of the things that helped keep this group together for so many years, because they had that outlet when they needed it, that type of thing.
Yeah, and it wasn't like they could kid each other and things like that and share common jokes and stuff, but it was their group, because like you said, they had all shared this common experience, and it was quite a ride. That you can't explain, what was it like? Well, you can read about it, you can write about it, but they actually experienced all this stuff going on while they were out there to, literally save the
Right,
world.
and I'll never forget that George Les told me this, and I think he told me this when I recorded an episode with him for Saving Private Ryan about the fact that they would bring other veterans that were not part of Easy Company sometime to these reunions, because there were people who just needed to have a forum to be able to be with other people who understand what they went through, that type of thing. So it's not as
Yeah.
if only the men of Easy had to deal with this, but when they identified someone else who needed this outlet, they welcomed them with open arms to join in their circle, in order to be able to get through. I mean, I've talked about this before, and I'm sure that it'll come up again. Some of these veterans, they went through a lot of emotional stuff afterwards, and even Doc Rowe's grandson said that his grandfather became a drunk. That was his way of dealing with it. He would
Yeah.
just he would drink, and we know about Nixon. I mean, that they don't shy away from here at all, about the fact that
No, no.
Nixon
Or
took a very long time till he was able to kick his habit also.
yeah, I'm just looking at some old documents written during the Mexican War, and there was a and the thing about, non-veterans trying to experience this or writing poetry about it or thinking, romanticizing the the deeds that these guys were doing. This Indiana volunteer said, if you think this is a romantic spot or that there's poetry connected with our situation, you need only imagine us trudging through a swamp, lugging our moldy crackers and fat bacon to become convinced that this is not a visionary abode. I've seen the elephant, and I hope I shall never be compelled to see it again. So, it's something that they're torn. This is an unforgettable experience in their lives. With World War II, less so, but with the Civil War, some of these guys have never, had never been a hillside away from their
Right.
home, especially, if you're from like the hills of Virginia. And all of a sudden they're thrown into this world conflict, and they're battling for the future of humanity, and trying to boil it down and say, well, what was that like? Well, there's no easy way of plugging that in. That's why we have so many different books about World War II, different people's experiences when they were
Right.
there. And I, from what, even reading it, the authors admit in many of these books that they can't capture, they can only put into words what they could fit into words, that the war didn't fit into words or pictures or things like that. It's even Band of Brothers is a boiled down version of what happened in World War II for these guys.
Completely. That's why, I mean, I've mentioned this before, that the Pacific is more brutal in showing the after effects also, and also showing, what some of the men did during the course of the war. But the whole idea of Eugene Sledge, his father tries to convince him, don't go to war because you won't come back the same person. And he's like, ah, you don't know what you're talking about, old man, type of thing. And then he comes back and, he realizes that his father was right, that type of thing. And then, as Shifty is walking out of the room, we get a narration from Winters that says, 2 days later, 50 Powers was on a truck headed for the rear and a boat home. Unfortunately, the truck was hit head-on by a drunken corporal from another regiment. 50 had a broken pelvis, a broken arm, and a bad concussion. He survived, but then spent the next few months in a series of hospitals. I wish I could say he was our only casualty in Austria. So I actually now want to read what it says in the book about this. They talk about the idea of points. Getting home depended on points, which became virtually the sole topic of conversation and led to much bad feeling. The point system set up by the army gave a man points for each active duty service month, points for campaigns, points for medals, points for being married. The magic number was 85 points. Those with that many or more were eligible for immediate shipment home and discharge. Those with fewer points were doomed to stay with the division, presumably right on through to the big jump in China or Japan. So, for the first time in their army careers, the officers and men became sincerely concerned with medals. A bronze star was worth 5 points. Inevitably, the army's hierarchical and bureaucratic systems played favorites. Lieutenant Foley recalled the regiment adjusted the regimental adjunct who picked up a bronze star for, according to a rumor, selecting the hotel Zell for Sink's HQ. The men of Easy felt cheated in another way. In the paratroopers, it had been darn near impossible to win a medal other than the Purple Heart. In the 101st, for example, Webster wrote, only two men had been awarded the Medal of Honor, a private and a lieutenant colonel from the 502nd, and they both had been killed in action. Major Winters, who had acquired it legitimately in a fracas with a German battery in Normandy, wore the only Distinguished Service Cross in the 2nd Battalion. In E Company, Captain Spears and two or three others had 100 proof silver stars, and about 12 men displayed bronze stars. Of Purple Hearts, there were aplenty. That was not a direction, a de decoration, but a badge of honor, infantry. Most of the men in E Company had for decorations only the four battle stars on their ETO ribbon, no more than a personnel clerk who had never left the base camp. There was McClung, for instance, Webster complained. He was quiet, lanky, and unimpressive, and nobody noticed him. But his buddies in the 3rd Platoon swore that old one lung had killed more Germans than any other man in the battalion. McClung could smell kraut. He hunted them. He pursued them in dawn attacks and on night patrols. He went on his way to kill them. He went out of his way to kill them. He took more chances and volunteered for more dangerous jobs than any other man in the company. McClung had made every day in Normandy, Holland, and Bastogne, and what did he have to show for it? An ETO ribbon and four battle stars. Meaning he didn't get any points for that. Sergeant Shifty Powers was in the same category. As good a soldier as there was in the 101st, he had no medals, no Purple Heart, so not enough points. But the grumbling had grown to such proportions that General Taylor decided to have a drawing in each company. The winner would be rotated home. Powers did not want to attend the drawing. Hell, Paul, he told Sergeant Rogers, I've never won anything in my life. But Rogers persuaded him to go, and he won. Immediately, Another soldier offered Powers $1,000 for the trip home. Powers recalled, "I thought about that for a while. $1,000 is a lot of money. But finally I said, no, I think I'll just go home." Powers gathered up his loot, mainly pistols, got his paperwork done, drew his back pay, and joined the 10 other lucky men for a ride to Munich. Going around a curb, a GI truck hit the truck head-on. Powers flew out and over the top of the truck, hit the pavement, broke some bones, and got a bad concussion. Another one of the lucky soldiers was killed. Powers went to hospital, where he lost all his back pay and souvenirs to thieves. He eventually got home via a hospital ship months after the comrades he had left behind. So, yeah, you know, the story in the book is sadder than what they explained to us, you know, in the miniseries.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, it's frustration that these guys have to deal with these type of things.
And, you know, and the idea that he probably didn't get home until like October. It's just, ugh, thanks, guys.
That's right.
Oh.
You know, and it's the irony of it all. You think he's going home, and that in the end, that's not what happens. I mean, going back to what we were talking about the other day, when they show the Winters and Shifty talking, they keep showing us shots of the mountains in the back, and you can clearly tell that that's a matte painting. It just overpowers the picture, you know, when you're looking
at it. Yeah, well, yeah, the weather doesn't last that long. I mean, you're in the mountains, and the sun doesn't stay up that long. If they're you know, moving the camera around trying to get pictures, like, oh, I want to just put up a backdrop and we can do it that way.
So it reminds me too much of like movies from the 40s, you know, where you just see the background and that's it. You know. So Shifty salutes and then gets a handshake from Winters as he walks off, and you know, moves on to his fate, I guess you can say, from that perspective. And then
it's a series wrap.
Then the shot changes and we see Welsh and Nixon talking, and Welsh goes, "I made up my mind, Nix. I got the points. I'm going back to Kitty." Because Harry, you really think the Kitty hasn't run off with some 4F by now? And Welsh goes, "You son of a bitch." And and then Winters shows up, and as he shows up, Welsh goes, "That's not even funny." Winters goes, "Harry, just ignore him." Welsh goes, "How am I supposed to tell her? I had the chance to come home to her finally, but decided not to, so that I can jump on Tokyo." And Nixon goes, "All right, so don't tell her. Besides, she's waited for 3 years, right?" He goes, "We'll be in Tokyo and back in 2 years. Three tops." And then Welsh goes, "It'll probably be over before you even get there. You know, the reality is you're going to sit here in Austria for 6 months waiting to go. And I'm going to be back in Wilkes Barre making babies."
It's good to have a
yes,
plan.
Yes, it definitely is. And then Winters says to Nixon, "You didn't tell him?" He goes, "No, I couldn't get him to shut up." "What? Tell me what?" Nixon goes, "Guts and Glory here applied for a transfer." "What?" "The 13th Airborne are heading out for the Pacific right away. If I'm going, I want to get it over with." And Welsh goes, "Are you in on this too?" Nixon goes, "I can't let him go by himself. He wouldn't know where it is." Welsh goes, "You're leaving the men?" He says, "They don't need me anymore." Which is a very interesting comment, because we know that Winters really doesn't believe that line.
Yeah. But it's necessary. It's one of those Harry and Henderson things. You gotta act like you're not needed. But he just, you know, he's gonna go fight that war. Or we think he's gonna go fight
right.
that war. So we'll see what happens on the next episode. But it's it's interesting the transition. Oh, there's so many transitions going on here. As you know, there's, it's almost like a, I mean, not only are they starting to go their separate ways, but the organization itself is breaking down. There's less orders coming top down, although there will be some more just to keep everybody in line. Where the NCOs are supposed to get out there and start doing close order drill and doing physical fitness stuff. But they know that the war is almost over for most of them. I don't think they all think that they're going to get sent to Japan. But it just depends. Their chances for going home have
Well,
increased greatly.
unless you sign up
And
going, you want to go.
yes, you gotta
But I mean,
re-enlist.
it's interesting. We talked about this the other day. I mean, the fact that he wants to now go with the 13th Airborne, it's still going to take him, what, a month or two to get there. It's not like they're going to,
And he's also got to get, the physical training is for everybody, and other than Winter's taking a swim every day, I don't know how much PE they're doing on getting back into shape. I don't know how many push-ups these guys could do right now, because they've all been, from Berchtesgaden Garden to Austria. I think the Kugel and the Streusel
No,
probably
probably.
haven't been helping them any. Although yeah, and the even the NCOs and the privates have been eating nothing but dried up spuds. So there's lots of starch, lots of
Exactly.
carbs, but not a lot of action.
And then the shot changes, and we see the hands of a man that you know. I don't know if you know him personally, but you've seen his work, I guess you can say. We won't talk
Yes.
too much about him today, but I couldn't not talk about the fact that this is an actor who portrayed someone that you knew very, very well in person, the real person.
Yeah, and he also, well, he was also responsible for the
Yes.
Terminators. I
Yes,
mean,
of course. But Robert Brewster and Frank Borman are slightly different.
But getting that, he really was the perfect cast for Frank Borman.
Yeah, so this is
That
David Andrews. Tomorrow, with my guest, we will probably talk about him much more. But like I said, I wanted to give Jim a little bit of an opportunity because at least we see his hands. So it's something.
And I've several times on my Facebook page, I've posted pictures of the real Frank Borman's hands, and it really is something when you're sitting next to the real, these real heroes, actual people. When you're sitting there looking at them and thinking, this guy's been behind the moon, and this guy's piloted a Saturn V, it really gives you pause. And they're normal guys. They're and all these, even the characters that all these actors are portraying, they're real people. They had real lives. But when you meet them in person, there's still this kind of an aura about them when you see them, and you thought, this is the real guy that I've been reading about, that I know his life story. He doesn't know me, but I know him all too well. And it's always kind of I don't know, it's a transcendental experience when you meet someone like
For
that.
sure. Right. So we see that these hands moving papers, basically, getting ready for an interview, which we will discuss that interview tomorrow, with my next guest, if he decides to show up tomorrow. We'll see. Exactly. Let's
Fingers crossed.
hope he decides that he wants to come. So Jim, is there anything else that you want to discuss or mention about the Band of Brothers that you haven't had the opportunity to do so yet?
I've enjoyed Band of Brothers. All the Playtone shows really have a feeling. They get you in a mood from the opening credits. The opening credits of all of them, they're very ethereal and very emotional. And I enjoy the honesty about it. The thing about Band of Brothers that is so good is it's not a hagiography. It's not, these guys aren't saints. They're not perfect people, and they show everything warts and all in this, and you're going to have some upcoming episodes where it's not so great, with the not so great moments of this group. And I'm really, you know, that these guys that were in the old guard, that were part of all this, no matter what they did, the great things that they did, they probably still had guilty feelings about things that happened to them. That's why they had to get the story, put pen to paper and write about the good and the bad things that happened while they were out there fighting World War II. And I really appreciate being able that they got this onto screen. You got to see these heroic guys. They weren't always perfect, but we could appreciate the kind of work that they did that literally saved the world.
I definitely agree with that. All right, so today's segment is called "Oh Brother," where my guests will give their top five movie brothers. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, my number five is Rain Man, which I'm sure other people have probably brought up, but Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman as brothers. Great comedy, great, very emotional story, and very funny. It's really it was Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman are top notch. They're definitely, if you want to make a movie with either of them, you're going to have a good film. And putting them both together in the same room, and you know that some of that stuff was improv work. All they had to do is just turn the cameras on and let it go. But they did such a great job, and you felt simultaneously loving and uncomfortable at the same time. So I had a good time with number five, Rain Man. Number four, I didn't like the movie, but I always liked the TV show. And well, actually, there were two movies that were made from the TV show. So I have to put in Thunderbirds. In this case, I'll go with Thunderbirds or Go and Thunderbirds 6. There was a remake with Bill Paxton that was not so great. Ben Kingsley, and they could have done a lot better with the movie, with the remake. But Thunderbirds, yes, they're puppets, but they're also brothers, and they're all named after Mercury astronauts. So it's a my a secret joy from my childhood. So I would say Thunderbirds at number four. Number three, the Blues Brothers. I would, Jake and Elwood are great. It's interesting how many of them are comedies, but I guess that's the idea. I'm an only child, so I didn't have a brother, but I liked the support system that Jake and Elwood had with each other, no matter what the mayhem was.
Yes.
Mostly self-inflicted, but the Blues Brothers having having all the problems pretty much self-inflicted, but they had good hearts, and of course they were on a mission from God,
That's
so
true.
you have to cut them
And
some
just stay away
slack.
from the penguin.
Let's see, number two.
Might get
That's
slapped
true.
under the.
Yes. I've had many penguins in my past, so I
I can't
identify
for some
strongly.
reason, you know.
I don't know.
No penguins in my city.
But I still have. I think I have. I have some. Still have some scars on my knuckles. But anyway, that was long ago. My number two, I have to go with the two brothers, Scott Glenn. And
Kevin Costner.
oh my gosh, hang on, Kevin Costner in Silverado, of course. Rob, one of my favorite. Well, actually, it may be my favorite Western, but Silverado is how Westerns should be. So, Westerns need to have good guys, bad guys, and you got to have brothers duking it out against the bad guys, and or shooting it out in that case. They had some great six guns, but Scott Glenn, and I really just enjoy him explaining that he had to bust this guy out of jail because, well, he's my brother. That was his job. Save him from the noose. So, Silverado number two. And number one, I'm going back to what we were talking about the other day with bands and singers. I've got to go with The Godfather. Fredo, Michael, Sonny, they were brothers, and like them or not, they had quite an interesting family dynamic, and some difficult decisions were made at the time, but there was an interesting interesting sibling rivalry going on there. Michael being the reluctant brother that becomes the head of the household after his other two brothers fail to live up to their father's needs for some reasons or other. And it made me thankful for Easy Pass instead of stopping at
Yeah,
the
just
toll booth.
be careful there.
But and yeah, and don't go with your brother to
Yeah, that's true.
Havana speakeasies. Or go fishing in a boat in Vegas. So yeah, I'd say Godfather number one brother movie for good or bad. Those are brothers that you'll never forget. So those are
Okay,
my choices.
excellent. Great choices. And now we will play for one final time, name that World War II movie. So let's spin the wheel and let's hope it's another one that you've seen this time. Jim, you seem like I'm torturing
Come on, great train robbery. It's a silent. Yeah.
you.
Let's see. That's not a World War II movie. Just a guy with
No,
a gun.
it Okay, this is a movie from 1964. And it stars Cliff Robertson and George Chakiris as a pilots in a RAF squadron that's assigned to knock out a German rocket fuel factory in Norway.
Oh gosh, I know this one. I was just watching this one. Crap, it's not. Hang on, let me think. It doesn't have the word battle in the
No.
title, right? It's the somebody somebodies.
It's got a number in the title. It's basically the name of the unit, the military unit.
It's gonna hit me. Let me think. 1964. It's not the Dam
Oh,
Busters. That was a
that
different.
was
That was a different
55.
thing. Yeah.
Which I love the trivia about the Dam Busters, about that George Lucas used that for the Attack of the Death Star.
Oh yeah, for using it for the yeah. Oh wait. It's wasn't it like the 410
It's something
squad or
like
something?
that.
It was
It's
the
a number, and I told you, it's the number and name of the unit.
yeah, I can't remember the number, but it was like the I don't know the not the 9925
Oh, squadron is the word.
squadron
Squadron is the
95
word that's there.
So pick a number between one and a thousand. It wasn't. It's it
has
had three.
three
It had
digits.
three
It
digits. So
does
I'm
have
gonna say
three
something
digits,
like the
and one of the digits is a
five.
duplicate of the other two.
Is it the 558 squadron? I do. Yeah, I do remember the.
I told you, when you put two of the numbers together, they are two of the
Put two
numbers
of the numbers
together
together. Okay, wait.
makes the third number.
So it's the 236 squadron or the 32 squadron or
No, two.
the 224 squadron.
There are
There's
two
two
numbers that
numbers
are
that are
the
the
same,
same,
and no,
and
those are
then
the
they.
second. That's the second and third digit. The first digit is the number that the other two digits together make up.
So it's like the 833.
Once again, three and three, three and three.
No,
No, but go back
844.
to what you were saying before. You were closer.
833. 633?
633. 633
633.
squadron.
Okay. I had the squadron. Yeah. Okay. 633 squadron.
Yes.
Is that right? 633.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yes. And I just saw that like a month or two ago. It's great film. Oh well.
Yeah.
I managed to fail on something every trivia, so thanks. I've got to, it just goes to show you I need to take better care of remembering titles for movies. And who is in movies? That's the other part.
Okay, well, sorry about that.
When I think Cliff Robertson in World War II, I think PT-109, but that's the wrong theater of operations.
Yes.
And that's another Cliff Robertson number movie.
Yes, it is.
So there you go. Okay.
Okay. Right. So, Jim, thank you for playing with that. Would you like to, for one final time this season, tell everyone where they can find Jim O'Kane?
Yes, please. Right as you are listening to this particular episode, we are in the depths of, or in the heights of, Captain America: The First Avenger, the 2011 Joe Johnston directed film, right out there at the Captain America Minute, where we go over the movie 1 minute of screen time per episode. So lots, and we're already, as we're recording this, we're about an hour, almost an hour and 10 minutes in. So there's probably lots of back episodes for you to listen to. So when you're done listening to Rob's podcast, just spin over to the Captain America Minute, probably on the same podcast server where you found this particular podcast, and listen to us. Or you can find us at the big site, capminute.com, for all your Captain America needs.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, Jim, thank you once again for joining me. It's always a pleasure having you on and talking to you.
Likewise, fun being here. You keep me on my toes, Rob. Thank you very much.
Well, I feel that's part of my duty, keeping Jim O'Kane on his toes.
I'm right now tippy-toed, so don't worry.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Completely understandable. All right, so I will be back tomorrow with another guest. But until then, Kurahi!
Kurahi!